John Justin, Maddie Head, and Joe Manning Wilson in The Franchise Affair, freely adapted by John Hyatt from the novel by Josephine Tay. The time is the present. The Franchise Affair.
Yes, of course. Oh, be fantastic. Your place tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, come on. He lives on that phone.
So I would. Hey, do what? Going too far again. Now, I must go now, Oma. Oh, I do. All right, sweetheart. Bye.
Roger?
Oh, you still up, Mum?
Roger, you've been 20 minutes on that phone. There could be urgent news from the police any moment.
Oh, I was talking to Karen.
Karen? I thought you'd been out with her this evening.
I have. I was just saying good night. Couldn't hear what we were saying, could you?
Not every word. Roger, dear, couldn't you use the call box at the end of the road?
Oh.
If the police don't phone, then Betty might.
Look, Mum, Betty's been gone for a fortnight. She'd been going to ring.
You take it so calmly. She's your sister.
She can look after herself.
She's barely 17. Anything could have happened to her. You think she's run off with some man, don't you?
Well, that's not as awful as you make out.
Oh, Roger.
Look, if she's with a boyfriend, then at least she's all right.
Then why hasn't she let us know? Why the silence? Why cause such worry? It's just not like her. You know it isn't, Roger. There's something terribly wrong. What's that?
Just a car. Mrs. Harris next door out in the tiles again. Come away from the window.
It's Betty.
What?
Roger, it's her.
Hey?
Look, it's Betty.
Just have a look.
Mind, let me get there.
There's a bloke with her.
Betty?
What's happened to her, Mum? She's hurt. She can't stand.
Oh, Betty. Oh, my darling.
You look after her, Mum. I'm going to talk to that driver.
Betty, it's all right. Shush now. Come inside. Come on. Now let me look at you. Your face. You're bleeding.
Oh, don't touch my back.
Your coat's torn. Who's done this? Who's done this to you?
Mum, I tried to get away. Day after day, I thought I'd die. I'd never get out. They kept me locked up.
How many of them were there?
Two of them. They gave me a lift that night. Said they'd take me home. I thought they were being kind. Oh, Mum!
Oh, shush. All right.
No one ever came to the house. I screamed and shouted. No one ever came.
The driver's gone for a doctor and the police. He says he found her on the Chichester Road. She was dead beat and
she's been whipped. Poor child. Two men, she says, in a lonely house.
No.
Oh, it's all right, lovey. It's all right.
Not men. Not men. Two women.
Women? God. Women did this to you? What women?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about... I don't...
Betty, you're safe now.
You're all right now.
Oh, Mum, they're mad. If they ever find me...
They won't find you, but we must find them.
Oh, Mum, don't. Look, she's hysterical.
Just their names, Betty.
I don't know.
What did they call each other?
Mother. The old one was the mother. Her daughter had the whip. A sort of horse whip.
No.
I tried to fight her. I couldn't. She's strong and tall. Her mother called her Marion.
Do you know it's nearly 4 o'clock?
Is it? I missed my watch. I ought to get another.
Oh, what happened to the one you had? It suited you.
Oh, I lost it.
It's not like you, Marion. You're such a careful person. You sure it's not somewhere in the house? If you took it off to wash up or
it's
something.
It's not in the house, Robert. If you must know, it was stolen.
Stolen?
Mm.
Oh, when was this? You never told me.
There was no point in making an issue of it. Your legal mind would have been endlessly curious and...
Thank you, dear, thank you.
I'm sorry. That was very rude. I'm not a good loser, I'm afraid. If I hadn't made a fool of myself at the ninth hole this afternoon, no doubt I'd have told you all about the wretched watch.
Well, never mind. You'll be splendidly mellow after tea.
Oh, Robert, how little you know me. I'm very un-English in some way. The council should put a warning sign on this hill. You never know what might be over the other side.
Oh, but I do. The most hideous house in the county.
It is an eyesore, isn't it? Even the name's unattractive. The Franchise. One day, God willing, they'll convert it into luxury flats with central heating and a resident porter. Having first paid Mother and me enormous compensation, of course.
I can think of another reason why you might leave the Franchise.
Now, Robert, don't. I'm not in the mood for proposals.
Same old excuse. What have you got against marriage, Mary?
I hate being tied.
But you are tied to your mother.
Oh, rubbish. She's completely independent.
Hello. You've got visitors.
Oh, we can't have. We don't know anybody.
Well, there's a car in the drive.
Hmm?
It looks like a police car.
No, it can't be.
Well, hold on a moment. We'll soon see. It is a police car.
Yes.
There's a policeman in the back with a young girl.
Robert?
Oh, that's Hallam on the doorstep. He's seen us.
You know him?
Yeah, he's an inspector, local man. We play golf occasionally. Good afternoon, Inspector.
Oh, hello, Mr. Blair. A bit of luck finding you here.
Did you want to see me?
Miss Sharp?
Yes.
Yes, madam, if you please. You and your mother.
My mother rests in the afternoons. I'd rather not disturb her.
Well, then just yourself to begin with. Thank you.
Are your companions coming in, Inspector?
Not just at the moment, madam.
Come into the drawing room. I was going to give Mr. Blair some tea. Perhaps you'd like to...
I'd rather we didn't delay matters, if you don't mind.
What is all this about, Hallam?
2 weeks ago, a young girl named Betty Kane disappeared from her home in Larborough, New Town. The fact was reported to the police by the girl's mother, but no trace could be found of her. 3 days ago, the girl turned up on her own doorstep in a very distressed condition.
Oh.
She'd been beaten up and was in a state of shock. So much so that it's taken time to get a coherent story out of her. It's a story that makes serious allegations.
Yes?
On the night of May the 2nd, the date she disappeared, Miss Kane claims she was picked up in a car by two women, driven to their home, and held there for a fortnight against her will. The house, she says, was a large, old, mansion-type place standing in its own grounds about 30 miles outside Larborough, now allowing for a radius of twice that distance. The Franchise is the only house that fits the girl's description. You and your mother, Miss Sharp, answer the descriptions of the two women.
Oh.
Now, you don't have to say anything.
Not say anything? Not say Marion. Anything? You accuse me of kidnapping some girl, of beating her up. How do you expect me not to say anything?
Is that the girl? Outside in the police car?
That's right.
How old is she? 14, 15?
She was 17 on the 1st of May. It was the day after her birthday that she disappeared.
17? She looks much younger.
She's been brought up on some very unhealthy fairy tale.
I take it you deny her allegations.
Well, you don't expect me to admit them.
You'd better give us some details, Hallam.
Of course. On the night she disappeared, Betty Kane was walking home from Larborough, having missed the last bus.
She spent the evening in Larborough.
At a youth club, a place called The Scene. It was coming on to rain. She got no money for a taxi, so she decided to walk. After about 20 minutes, a battered old grey car passed her and stopped just ahead.
Was the girl hitchhiking?
She says not.
How far away was her home, then?
5.5 miles.
And it was raining. In her place, I'd have hitched a lift.
There were two women in the car. The driver aged about 36, tall, well-spoken, rather dark, and a much older woman who was sitting in the back. The woman who was driving asked the girl if she wanted a lift. The girl accepted because by this time the rain was coming down heavily.
And was it?
It was bucketing down, sir. That was the night the errand flooded. The women were very friendly and talkative, so the girl paid little attention to the direction they were taking. When eventually the car stopped, Miss Kane was unable to recognize her surroundings. She asked where they were, and the older woman replied, "This is our home, my dear." The younger woman invited the girl to have supper with them, promising that later she would drive her home.
How very hospitable.
The girl was uneasy, but couldn't see how to refuse. The younger woman got out of the car and opened large iron gates before taking the car up the driveway to the house, which by this time it was too dark to see. The girl was taken into a large, bare kitchen.
Bare?
Very large and very bare.
While the older woman prepared a meal, the younger, whom she referred to as her daughter, fetched a blanket to wrap around the girl while her clothes were dried.
What did they talk about?
According to Miss Kane, they were anxious for details of her background. Was her family strict? Did she ever stay away from home? Was she looking for a job?
They offered her employment.
As a maid.
As a maid? The girl's been reading Agatha Christie.
Betty Kane's recollection of the rest of the evening is extremely sketchy. She says that after drinking coffee, she became ill and dizzy.
And Ian Fleming.
But she recalls being taken upstairs by the younger woman as soon as she said she felt sick. Wait a minute. Here we are. A flight of stairs with no carpet on them, but covered in worn-out lino. At the top of the stairs was an attic containing a broken camp bed. When Betty Kane woke up the following morning, she found herself on this bed, still wrapped in the blanket. On attempting to leave the attic, she found that the door was locked and the small round window wouldn't open.
She specifies that.
She does, yes. A small round window facing the road. I could see the driveway running from the front door, curving round a little pond that had dried up and going on to the iron gates, which looked a bit rusty. She's very specific, Mr. Blair.
Aren't there any other old houses with rusty iron gates close to Larbury?
Two, as a matter of fact, Miss Sharp. The other is the old people's home at Milford.
Oh. How long was Betty Kane left alone in the attic?
Not long. The younger woman brought her food and returned her dry clothes. Girl says she refused the food on the grounds that she must get home immediately. At that, the woman shut the door and told her to sit down. She wasn't going anywhere.
This is getting exciting.
Now, Betty Kane was kept in that attic for a fortnight. She was starved and threatened and maltreated. She was told that unless she waited hand and foot on these two women, she would never get out of that house again.
Then why not do just that? Her chances of escape would have been 100 times greater if she'd had the run of the house.
Yes, but anyway, she escaped eventually. Now, how did she do it, Hallam?
Well, last Friday night when it was dark and Betty Kane was trying to sleep, the younger woman made another visit to the attic. This time she carried what the girl describes as a riding crop. And for no apparent reason, she beat the girl, black and blue. Finally, she went away. And when Betty Kane had sufficiently recovered, she saw that the door had been left unlocked. She plucked up courage and ventured onto the landing. There was no one about, so she crept down the stairs. On reaching the hall, she heard the two women talking in the kitchen at the rear of the house. She had her chance. Out of the front door, down the drive, out through the gates and into the road. She had no idea where she was. Her one concern was to get as far away from the house as possible and keep out of sight.
Out of sight? But surely a passing car would...
She was terrified of accepting another lift. I think that's understandable.
Are you telling us she walked the 30 miles back to Larbury?
I believe she was prepared to. But a short while later, on the London Chichester Road, the driver of a delivery van caught her in his headlights. He could see she was in a bit of a state, so he insisted on driving her back to Larbury. Didn't get much sense out of her because she was hysterical. He dropped her at her home. Her mother rang the police, the rest you know.
I know she's an accomplished liar.
I don't. I've got to check her story.
It's very detailed.
Very, and that should make the job much easier.
Mother, I thought you were resting.
When the house is surrounded by policemen, how could anyone rest in these circumstances? Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Blair.
Mother, this is Inspector Hallam.
How do you do?
How do you do?
You shouldn't sit in that armchair, Inspector. You're far too heavy for it.
Mrs. Sharp.
I'll tell her. Mother, the inspector wants us to see a young girl who has just returned home after being missing for a fortnight. This girl claims to have been forcibly detained and beaten by two women who wanted her for a servant. She's described her captors with such accuracy that there's little doubt we are the women in question.
What did we beat her with?
A riding crop.
Have we got a riding crop?
Look, the point is, Mother, the inspector wants to see if this girl identifies us.
Have you any objection, Mrs. Sharp?
Oh, on the contrary. I look forward to the meeting with impatience. It's not every afternoon I go to rest a dull old woman and rise a potential monster.
Well, then, if you'll excuse me, I'll fetch Miss Kane.
This must be somewhat alarming for you, Mr. Blair. You take my daughter out to play golf, and on your return discover that she's been exceeding herself with a riding crop. Can't be easy for you as a respected solicitor to offer us professional guidance.
Mrs. Sharp, you don't think I believe this girl's story, do you?
Oh, not at all. I credit you with more perspicacity. I was referring to the nature of the allegations. Abduction and criminal assault are surely outside your normal range of experience.
Yes, I'm afraid that's true. My knowledge of criminal law is somewhat limited.
As I thought. Perhaps we can help to remedy that.
In here, Betty. That's right. No call to be nervous. Now, I want you to look very carefully at these two ladies. Miss Sharp, perhaps you'd be good enough to stand beside your mother.
The inspector wants you in the light, Marion.
Oh, yes.
There.
Well, Betty?
Yes.
You recognize these people?
The women, yes. They're the women who gave me the lift, the women who kept me here. And this is the house. I recognize it. The gates, the drive, the door to the kitchen is under the stairs.
Miss Kane, this is a very serious allegation.
Well, of course they're the women. Do you think I'm stupid? I saw them every day for a fortnight. Every day they came into the attic. They threatened me. They hit me.
You'll forgive me for interrupting the performance. But at my time of life, I don't care to be upstaged. Inspector, is the girl a virgin?
That question doesn't arise in this case, madam.
If I'd been missing from home for a fortnight, it's the first question my mother would have asked. However, now that Miss Kane has identified us, what do you propose to do? Arrest us?
I haven't got as far as that yet, Mrs. Sharp. I want the young lady to see over the premises.
So do I.
And if her description of the house tallies with what you find?
Then I report the fact to my superiors, and they decide on the next step.
Admirably painstaking. Now, if you'll excuse me, Inspector, I shall return to my rest.
But don't you want to be present when Miss Kane sees the attic?
Not unless you specifically advise it. I haven't the least doubt that she will identify each floorboard. Indeed, I should be surprised beyond belief if she failed to do so. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Marion will show you the way.
If I recall Miss Kane's statement correctly, she said the stairs were covered in lino. This is a perfectly good carpet we're treading on, which, to my certain knowledge, has been down 3 months.
I said it was the last flight that was covered in lino, the one before you get to the attic.
That flight, Inspector, fell victim to our economy drive.
You see? Old worn lino. It was here when my mother and I came here. And this is the door to the attic.
You always keep it locked, Miss Sharp?
Always. It's used for storing junk. I only come up here occasionally.
And your mother?
Contrary to what Miss Kane has said, my mother never comes up here. The stairs are too much for her.
There you are, Inspector.
Ah, yes. Ah, the small round window, I see.
The glass is cracked.
Oh, that was me. I did that trying to smash the window.
Oh. What did you use to hit it with?
My shoe. I'd only hit it a couple of times when she came in. She said if I tried it again, she'd half kill me.
This crack looks fairly old to me, Helen.
Can you account for it, Miss Sharp?
I'm afraid not. Like the lino, it was there when we moved in.
Hmm. Plenty of dirt in the crack, I grant you.
But it could have been put there deliberately. I quite understand.
What does Miss Kane identify in this room? Have you got her statement?
Camp bed, of course.
Oh, yes.
Three empty suitcases behind the door. Hmm. One was dark blue with a soft top and rust in the locks.
But there's only one. No, there's only two here. Neither of them's blue. Look, Helen.
There were three. Honestly, she's got rid of the other one.
That's quite true. Though it wasn't disposed of from any ulterior motive, I threw out that case with some other useless items a few days ago.
Which day, Miss Sharp?
I think last Saturday.
The day after I escaped.
It's all right, then. What happened to the suitcase, madam?
I burnt it.
But you didn't dispose of this old chair or those piles of newspapers.
Newspapers are useful for 101 things. The chair could be reupholstered. Look, do I have to account for every speck of dust in this room?
Is there anything else you want to see in here, Helen?
No, that's fine, thank you. If it's not too much trouble, perhaps we might see the garage now. The description of the car is also very detailed.
I always have trouble with this door when it's been raining.
Let me, Marion.
The wood swells.
Ah, yes.
It's a very common make of car, Inspector. Old, but serviceable.
There's a slight dent in the rear bumper, I believe.
Yes, I was reversing impatiently after a bad game of golf.
And, there's a deep scratch on the offside rear passenger door. Ah, yes.
I've no idea how that got there.
Did Miss Kane mention the registration number in her statement?
Oh, I never saw that. But it was dark when they picked me up.
Then how did you know about the dent and the scratch?
Well, she told me. This woman kept on talking about her car. She's got a thing about
Inspector,
it.
This girl has made some accurate guesses. And
more than guesses.
All right. She's displayed a certain knowledge. But can't you see? Surely, if her story were true, there'd be nothing for you to see here. My mother and I would have destroyed these incriminating objects days ago.
We'd have burned the camp bed and all the suitcases. We'd have put carpet on the stairs.
Miss Sharp, if I'd found your attic stripped bare, I'd be highly suspicious. As it is, there's nothing to distinguish it from 100 others. No, nothing to detain you any longer. Very grateful for your cooperation. Good afternoon, Mr. Blair.
Good afternoon.
Come on, Betty. We must get you home before your mother starts worrying again.
He treats that creature like a piece of precious china.
Don't place any significance on that. Hallam's a careful man. He goes by the book.
The whole thing's like a book. Oh, how did she find out so much about us? She walks in, a total stranger, and shatters everything.
Could she be friendly with anyone who knows you?
No, that's out of the question. Mother and I enjoy our own company. We don't bother to cultivate other people's.
You cultivated mine.
Ah, you're different. We like you.
Your mother wasn't shocked, was she, when she heard the girl's story?
My mother was brought up to believe that any display of emotion was ill-bred. I thought you didn't believe the girl's story.
I don't.
Then why have you asked that question about my mother?
A lot of questions are going to be asked about both of you.
You think the police will take this further? That there would be a criminal charge?
If the assault on the girl was serious...
If they found us guilty, what then?
Well, I'm not sure. Between 6 months and 2 years imprisonment. I'd have to look it up.
Yes, do. There's quite a difference. Robert, I mustn't keep you. To spoil your dinner on top of all this would be unforgivable. At least, I'm sure that's how it would appear to your mother.
So that's why you were late for dinner. You were having a conducted tour of the franchise. Hmm? Do they have dungeons and skeletons in their cupboards? The only thing that abortive house lacks is a moat. Excuse me. Pass the sugar, Bob.
Neville, since the day you went to teach at university, your table manners have degenerated. You were never allowed to behave like that as a child.
Don't nag, Mother. It's not every week I'm home. And it's not every week Brother Bob has such a sensational case dropped in his lap.
It is not a case yet.
But it has all the ingredients. A fabulous cause célèbre. Think of your reputation at the end of it. No square country solicitor image anymore. The TV courtroom defender acquittal guaranteed. Oh, do pass that sugar. This rhubarb's choking me.
Oh, you exaggerate, dear. I like it sharp.
Ah, so we gather, does Bob? Hmm? The persecuted Marion? Is she beautiful as well as persecuted, Bob?
Oh, shut up.
I couldn't call her beautiful. Distinctive, certainly.
Much more Bob's cup of tea. And now, what about the Kane girl? Is she telling the truth?
Oh, she must be, dear.
Why, Mother?
Well, how else could she have described the house so accurately and the car? And the Sharps themselves.
Well, perhaps someone who knows the Sharps described them to Betty Kane.
No, Marion can't accept that.
Why not?
Because Marion Sharp and her mother are antisocial. They make a point of being mysterious and aloof.
But not depraved.
I hope not. But no one knows that, Robert. They've lived here for 6 months, but you're the only person they've ever asked inside the franchise.
Should I advise them to open their gates to the public at 2 and 6 a time?
Who exactly are the Sharps?
That's what we'd all like to know. They must have some money because Marion doesn't work.
No, that's not strictly true, Mother.
Oh, no, I remember the vicar told me. She works for charity, Oxfam or Vietnam or something like that. Really, Neville, your manners are appalling.
Mother, Marion and old Mrs. Sharp are heading for a lot of unpleasantness. Gossip isn't going to help them.
Well, I can hardly gossip, can I, dear, if you're dealing professionally with the case. Don't be silly. You know you can trust me.
I wouldn't have breathed a word to you otherwise.
Do you trust me too, Bob?
Yeah, well, you'll be back at the university next week. There's not much harm you can do.
Harm? I'll have you know I'm a champion of people like Marion Sharp.
Oh, how chivalrous of you, dear. I thought you were more inclined to encourage girls like Betty Kane.
Well done, Mother.
University, after all, must be a hotbed for... what do they call them? Dolly girls? And you're very vulnerable, Neville, to girls of that type.
Vulnerable? Me?
People find that hard to recognize in themselves. Marion Sharp must be dazed by the discovery. She's so very self-sufficient. Robert, if that young girl wasn't locked in the attic of the franchise for a fortnight, and frankly, I don't see where else she could have been, where do you think she was?
With a man.
Well, that's obvious.
And easy to say.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. It'll be the devil's own job to prove it. My one prayer at the moment is that the papers don't get hold of the story. If they publish Betty Kane's lies before we can contradict them, then life will be hell for Marion.
Betty! Hey, Betty, I want you.
Oh, Betty, what are you doing down here?
I want to talk to you.
Oh, not now. John, don't leave.
Yeah, I know, but this is urgent.
Oh.
Sorry, Len. Won't keep her long.
Okay, mate.
Oh, put up brothers. Honestly.
Come on, there's a chap upstairs I want you to see.
Who?
Well, he's a reporter.
Reporter? Oh, no.
Oh, yes. We're going to see those two bitches at the franchise get what they deserve.
The police will see to that.
Ah, the fuzz will do nothing. The lawyers will have fixed them.
No, they won't. That man Hallam saw my back. He saw the bruises where she hit me. He was furious, Roger. You won't let them get away with it.
Well, nor will the newspapers. The reporter wants to see your back.
Oh, no.
Look, Bet. You don't know how lucky you are. Those two women could have killed you. You might be buried in some grotty cellar by now. And they could easily do it again.
But they wouldn't dare.
You don't know that. Now, come on, there's nothing to be scared of. Just tell the reporter what you told the police, okay?
Okay.
That's my girl. We'll make those two women sorry they ever laid a hand on you.
Good shot, Marion. Well done.
Does one say good shot on a golf course? Sounds the right thing. Responses in sport are sadly deficient in variation. Have you noticed?
Never. What nonsense you talk.
First impressions are utterly unreliable. When you've known me a few more hours, you'll realize I'm deeply profound.
Mm. I know you're a complete contrast to your brother. Robert would never call on a total stranger and invite her for a round of golf.
Ah, but you're not a stranger, Marion. Bob spends so much time talking about you, I feel I've known you all my life. Have you any idea of the transformation you've effected in my brother? He's always been solid and staid. Oh, I don't mean that unkindly.
I'd squash you if you did.
Bob needs someone to do his squashing for him. He has a bit of a time between mother and me.
Here, stop chattering and play your shot. There are others behind us.
Oh, Colonel Lacey, God
yes,
help us.
Yeah,
let's get out of here. Aren't you going to say good shot?
Did you notice the speed with which that ball disappeared? One clout and it soared into the sky and vanished. Betty Kane could have travelled a long way in a fortnight.
She could have been in Australia for all we know.
If she left the country, it would be easy to prove.
Not if she went as part of a man and wife team.
Hmm?
Well, that's the most likely explanation, you know. Bob got a medical report on the girl and your mother's guess was spot on. Betty Kane is a very modern young miss.
Hmm. Then why isn't someone checking on her memory?
What do you think Bob's doing right this minute? Don't underestimate my big brother.
Oh, I don't, Neville. I only hope he's not neglecting his other work on account of me and my mother.
Nothing would give him greater pleasure. After 15 years dealing with probate and property, a case of criminal assault is just what he needs. He's reveling in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not reveling. You know what I mean.
Yes, I know. And I'm grateful.
If it wasn't for you and Betty Kane, he'd be huddled in an armchair in the clubhouse over there, toying with a whiskey and soda and frowning into his newspaper. Instead of which, he's racing round Lavra, hot on the scent of Betty Kane's legion of lovers.
Morning, Mr. Blair.
Hello, Inspector. Don't usually see you in the club on Friday.
Today's a bit different, I'm afraid. Can I get you another scotch? Look as if you need it, sunk in that chair.
Not just now, thanks.
You're reading the record, I see. Good picture of the girl, isn't it?
Who gave them the story? Her family?
Well, whoever it was, I could brain them. Your people at the franchise seen it yet?
I doubt it. The record isn't the type of paper Mrs. Sharp would read.
I'd like to see her face when she gets acquainted with it.
Hmm?
I'd advise you to tell them about this as soon as you can.
Oh?
There are some crimes the public won't stand for at any price. Anything involving children, for instance. And Betty Kane's little more than a child.
In this photo, she looks little less than an angel.
Exactly. It'll bring the poison pens and the anonymous phone callers out of their holes with a vengeance. Sharps are due for a lot of unpleasantness.
You think they deserve it, don't you?
Frankly, yes.
You accept the girl's story without question.
Oh, come now, Mr. Blair. I've questioned it from beginning to end. That was my job. I've checked every detail. There's nothing to say the girl is lying.
Only Miss Sharp and her mother?
I've done some checking on them, too. Did you know they lived in London before they came down here? Boarding house in Kensington. Lived there for 3 years before they were asked to leave.
Oh?
One of the other guests had a dog, which Miss Sharp took great exception to. One day, apparently, she beat the animal with a stick. Had to be destroyed.
I don't believe it.
Oh, perhaps you'd better ask her. I'm coming across the car park. Oh, got your young brother with her, I see.
Now, Hallam.
Would you have any objection if I made a few inquiries myself? I'm their solicitor, after all.
I'd have no objection, Mr. Blair. But you'd have no authority, remember?
No, I understand that.
Now, there's Jerry Carpenter. Might as well see him while I'm here.
This is Betty Kane, bruised, battered, taken from her home. Oh, sentimental muck.
Why, Robert, you're the last person we expected to see. Neville said...
What are you doing with a rag like the record?
You'd better read it. Both of you.
Huh? This is a photo of the franchise.
It doesn't say so.
It doesn't have to. Once seen, never forgotten.
Quite. They've been very careful. Marion, I'm afraid that as a result of this, there may be obscene phone calls of people... we'll get nowhere by grimacing and saying, how awful. The first problem we've got to tackle is, how did Betty Kane know about the franchise?
Well, she could have seen it from the top of a bus.
Oh, don't be bloody silly.
I'm only trying to... What's biting you?
There are no buses running past the franchise. You know, the record may have done us a good turn by publishing the girl's photo. Someone may recognize it. Someone who saw her during that fortnight.
Yes, it's possible, but we can't rely on it. I want to find out about the girl herself, her friends, her school record, her character. I'm going to talk to her mother. She must know her better than anyone.
Now you're being naive.
Well, you've got to start somewhere. And then I'll see Kevin McDermott.
Who's he?
An old school chum.
He's an up-and-coming barrister with a shrewd Irish mind. He might have an original view of Betty Kane. But first, the mother.
Do sit down, Mr. Blair. You know my daughter, of course.
Good morning, Miss Kane.
Good morning.
You've been reading the record, I see.
It's not a newspaper I care for, but my son thinks it has its uses.
He was only trying to help.
He's old enough to have more sense.
Did you also think publicity would help, Miss Kane?
No, not really. There was nothing else I could do about it. Roger brought this reporter to the club. I had to talk to him.
He was persistent, was he?
We kept on and on. He was polite enough and pleasant.
Journalists are persistent by nature, just as my son is impetuous. Given time enough, though, he usually sees sense. In this case, there wasn't time. You must understand how he felt, Mr. Blair. His sister been ill-treated. He's very fond of her.
Of course.
I was angry with him myself at first, but... Oh, I'm sorry, this is quite irrelevant. It's Betty, not Roger, you want to talk about.
Miss Kane, had you ever seen or heard of Miss Sharp and her mother before you were missing?
No, never.
You know mutual friends or acquaintances?
Not that I know of, no.
Do these people say otherwise?
No, on the contrary, they regard it as highly unlikely.
I shouldn't think they have many friends.
What makes you say that?
Am I right?
They're newcomers to the district.
People can sense things. I'm sure if I met them, I wouldn't like them.
But you're prejudiced.
Well, of course I am. But if I met them without knowing who they were, it's difficult to imagine women so depraved that they'd treat a helpless girl like that.
If you could meet them, Mrs. Kane, you'd find it quite impossible.
You don't believe me, do you? I could see you didn't the day we met in their house.
I don't know you, Miss Kane, but I do know the women you've accused.
Betty, go and start lunch, will you? Roger will be home any moment. You don't mind, Mr. Blair?
No, not at all.
You think that medical report is highly significant, don't you? It's sad, certainly. And it was a shock to me when I found out. But the premature loss of virginity doesn't automatically make a girl a liar.
No, of course not.
You don't sound convinced. You don't know much about young girls, do you, Mr. Blair?
Absolutely nothing. They rather terrify me. What I really want, Mrs. Kane, is a general picture. It's difficult to ask specific questions.
Yes, it must be. I shouldn't like to be in your shoes. I can only tell you that Betty is like any average girl of her age group. She's difficult at times. She likes to enjoy herself. She's reasonably intelligent. I've got a wide experience of children, Mr. Blair. Before my marriage, I was a school teacher. Not a very good one. That's why I got married at the first opportunity. But unlike you, I know about young girls.
The night she came home, it was clear that she'd been savagely beaten.
Oh, if you could have seen her. There was blood on her face. Her back was a mass of bruises.
Were they fresh bruises?
Oh, yes, quite fresh. Some didn't begin to appear till the following day.
So the thrashing must have been administered shortly before her return.
It was administered, Mr. Blair. Her back and shoulders, and a little face. There was an inch-long cut on her right temple.
And then she told a complicated story.
On the contrary. It was a frighteningly simple one.
She describes the house in such detail. The women, the attic.
Well, she was locked in that room for a fortnight, Mr. Blair. Of course she describes it in detail. She'll remember it for the rest of her life.
Mum, is lunch ready?
This is my son. Roger, this is... close the door, dear. This is Mr. Blair.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Blair's the solicitor for those... for the other side.
Oh, is he?
But we find ourselves in full agreement about the story in the Record.
Well, it's a gotty paper, okay. But they'll see this isn't swept under the mat and forgotten. They'll keep the police on their toes.
Yes, that'll do. Mr. Blair is as shocked as we are by what happened.
Oh, Mum. If he was really shocked, he wouldn't be defending those perverted bitches.
Roger!
It's all right, I do sympathize with your point of view, Mr. Kane. But personally, I'd rather be beaten for a fortnight than have my photo on the front page of the Record.
Oh, look. If somebody'd beaten you up, you'd do your best to get compensation. Well, Mum, if lunch isn't ready,
I... Go and ask Betty. She's getting it. I'm sorry. He's not usually so ill-mannered.
No, I'm sure he's not. Mrs. Kane, if it ever occurs to you that anything in Betty's story doesn't ring true, I hope you won't decide that sleeping dogs are best left alone.
Don't pin your face to that, Mr. Blair.
But you wouldn't...
I mean that if I believe my daughter in the beginning, I'm not likely to doubt her later. And I do believe her. Absolutely.
Oh, all right, Mother. I'll deal with it.
Hello? Hello, Marion.
Oh, Robert, it's you.
I thought the line had gone dead.
No, it's my fault, Robert. I didn't answer. Mother and I find it's the best policy. 5 times this morning we've answered the phone, and each time we've been met with a stream of abuse. It was Mother's idea to say nothing. She says half-wits are intimidated by silence. Where are you, Robert?
Halfway to London. I'm going to see Kevin McDermott.
Mm?
I thought you'd like to know that I've talked to Mrs. Kane.
The girl's mother. Was it worthwhile?
I didn't make any dramatic discoveries, I'm afraid. The girl was there, too. She was embarrassed, incidentally, by the press getting hold of the story, so whatever else she is, she's not malicious.
Not malicious? Well, how could you say that? If she hadn't told those lies in the first place...
It was her brother's idea to tell the press.
Well, she told the police, didn't she? She brought the police in. Robert, you're beginning to believe her, aren't you?
Of course not.
I can hear it in your voice. Something's worrying you. You better tell me, Robert.
Look...
Was it something Hallam said? You were talking to him in the clubhouse.
You're right, but we can't discuss it over the phone. I'll see you tonight when I get back from London. Hello. Marion?
Yes. Yes, all right. Tonight.
Goodbye, then.
The attentive Mr. Blair.
Attentive, but not so enthusiastic, I'm afraid. The police have made a discovery.
About us?
Yes. He didn't say what. He'd be more specific tonight.
Then you must make certain you dispel his doubts. Mr. Blair is valuable to us, Marion. You are right to cultivate him.
So that's the story, Kevin. And what do you think of it?
Oh, God love you, Bob. What a place to stop. You should be writing thrillers. I can't wait to hear the end.
But what's your opinion of the girl's story? The police are inclined to accept it.
Well, why shouldn't they? It's perfectly credible.
Credible?
Women who live alone have done insane things before now.
And angelic-looking schoolgirls have told fantastic lies.
Ah, now you know that much about young girls. I'm glad to hear it. Tell me we're getting married, Bob. We've all waited long enough.
Well, Kevin, and be serious.
You wouldn't have your eye on Marion Sharp now, would you?
I'm her solicitor.
Now, you've always been meticulous, but would you take quite so much trouble over another woman?
I don't believe she did it.
She beat the dog, didn't she? Or so the police say. Now, I'm surprised they've not applied for a warrant. In their place, I'd have risked it. Have another spot.
Oh, thanks, I will.
Perhaps they're thinking of a parallel case.
A parallel? When was this?
Pretty irreproachable girl told a similar story and led everyone up the garden. 1700 and something.
70? Oh, no. Who on earth remembers that?
I do. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, the nature of alibis hasn't changed much in 200 years.
Oh, you think Betty Kane's story is an alibi?
If it isn't the truth, why else should she tell it?
Ah, So we have to find out exactly where she was during that fortnight. That's a hell of a job. Where do I start?
I wouldn't tackle it that way myself. Work on what you've got, Bob. Her statement.
But it's so accurate.
What's accurate? Her knowledge or her guesses?
Well, she could have guessed a lot, but not that the door to the kitchen was under the stairs.
Then she had knowledge. She knew what she was talking about. Bob, are you sure you can trust the Sharps?
I'd like you to see them for yourself.
An invitation. Splendid fellow. I'm always fascinated by strange and mysterious women. How about lunch tomorrow?
Tomorrow?
I don't think we'd better waste time. Let the police get one spot of corroboration of Betty Kane's story, and they'll have a warrant at the door of the franchise before you can say handcuffs.
They won't get any corroboration. How could they?
Well, it does happen, old man. Be prepared. Your wronged ladies may be witches, after all.
I know now how people must have felt years ago when they were accused of witchcraft. Ever since the story got out, the phone hasn't stopped ringing. The post is obscene. Oh, if I could have Betty Kane in my power, I'd gladly torture her for a 12 months and then begin again on New Year's Day.
Marion, Mr. Blair has spent a lot of time on our behalf. He should be repaid with more than tantrums.
No, I know how Marion feels, how you both must feel. I only wish I could hold out some hope.
My daughter informs me that the police have made a discovery which is unfavorable to us.
That's quite true. It concerns a dog.
I see.
I'm told that when you lived in Kensington...
We lived in a no-star hotel with other impecunious women, one of whom was besotted by a stray dog, which she used to keep hidden in her room, as domestic pets were forbidden by the management. This animal, no doubt resenting its loss of freedom, one day escaped and found its way into my room, where it proceeded to create havoc. I caught it in the act and thrashed it. Look, I don't hate dogs.
Is it true that it had to be destroyed?
Quite true.
It was a sick animal when the woman found it.
Is it also true that you were asked to leave the hotel?
Certainly.
No, it is not. We left of our own accord some weeks later when Mother inherited this place.
Mr. Blair...
You're shocked, aren't you, Robert?
It's not a pleasant story, is it?
I don't have a pleasant temper. I'm afraid you don't know me very well.
Is any of this relevant, Mr. Blair?
It could be made so. You must see that.
Well, I see there's nothing we can say in our defense.
If the police do decide that they have a case and they bring it to court, then Kevin McDermott will find something to say. It's quite possible that we may find a clue at the scene.
The scene? Of what?
Well, that's the name of the club in Larborough that Betty Kane visited the night she disappeared. She may have a particular attachment to a boy there.
Has a boy accused anyone of detaining him in an attic?
Girls like Betty Kane aren't interested in mere boys. They want sex, not romance.
Don't you think... What the devil's that noise? There are people in the drive.
Our public, by kind permission of the record. They were here this morning.
What? They just walk in?
Without let or hindrance. They push open the gates and behave as though the place belonged to
them. What do
they do? They gawk, they stare, they nudge each other and point. We're at one with the monkeys in the zoo.
I'll soon put a stop to this.
Royalty is subjected to such behavior daily. I'm sure we can support it for a few months.
But it's intolerable. One of them's scrabbling in the drive.
Oh.
But he seems to have dropped something.
Come away from the window, Robert.
Look out! Oh. Not the blasted little idiot. I saw him.
Don't go out there. It'll make things even uglier. Look, they've taken fright now. See, they're going.
I agree with you, Mr. Blair. Yes. This has become intolerable. At my time of life, I'm unable to cope with drafts.
I'll have the pain replaced as soon as possible. I'll have a word with Hallam, too, see if he can spare a man to patrol the grounds.
You're very kind, Mr. Blair. Without you, I can't imagine what would become of us.
Robert, you're not going out.
Yeah, I'm going up to the franchise, Mother. One of their windows was smashed today by hooligans.
But you can't repair windows, dear. Why not ring up Johnson?
He's too busy, so he says.
Well, Neville, then. He's much more manually inclined than you.
Mother, there's nothing complicated about replacing a window pane.
Well, your father always claimed it was a delicate proceeding.
Delicate it may be, but it's simple enough if you know what you're doing.
Robert, dear, do you know what you're doing? Is it advisable for a man in your position to take such an active role? You're a solicitor, dear, not a detective.
There are too many people prepared to let Marion and her mother stew in their own juice.
What are you looking for, dear?
There was a putty knife in this drawer.
Well, sir, then it must still be there. That publication, the Record, hasn't been at all well received. Such a sensational story. Oh, it gives the town a bad name.
It didn't exactly make the Sharps more popular.
Oh, the vicar's wife insists on being Christian about it, but I think that's the wrong point of view.
Mother...
Well, Christianity is too often equated with feebleness. It isn't possible to reserve one's judgment indefinitely. Neville, dear, if you slam that door again, your brother will have to replace our windows, too.
Oh, sorry, Mother. What are you doing in the kitchen?
Robert is going to the franchise, but he's mislaid the butter knife.
The putty knife, Mother.
Oh, I've got that. I've just come from Marion's. I've put a new pane of glass in the front window.
You've done what?
I think you might have done something about those louts this afternoon, Bob. They could have smashed up the entire place.
Oh, I suppose you'd have fought the entire lot single-handed.
Robert, this has gone far enough. You are not to involve yourself in violence.
And what do you mean by barging in there this morning and asking her to play golf?
Well, you drowsed my curiosity.
Damn bad manners on your part, I think.
Robert.
Is it jealousy on yours? She's a very attractive woman. Oh, I'm too young for her, unfortunately, but you...
Neville, how can you talk such nonsense?
Enough said. Oh, just one thing. She sent you a message. When you and Kevin go to lunch tomorrow, will you take Betty Kane's statement with you?
What for?
She wouldn't say, but she was very insistent, so don't forget or you'll be out of favor. Mother, is there anything to eat? I'd no idea repairing windows could make you so hungry.
Milk and sugar, Mr. McDermott.
Both, please. And thank you for an excellent lunch. I'm still astounded by the discovery of a Montrachet in this part of the world.
Kevin regards anywhere south of the Chelsea Embankment as Philistine country.
I was brought up to appreciate good wine. My husband kept a reputable cellar, though his palate wasn't nearly as good as mine. But my brother at Lessways had an excellent palate and a cellar to match.
Lessways? You're never Charlie Meredith's sister.
I am.
This is remarkable. The first pony I ever had came out of Lessways.
Oh, are you a lover of horses, Robert?
No more than an admirer. What do the experts tip for hunting tomorrow?
Wait for no one.
Rubbish. Hmm? None of that Hippocrest blood was any good when it came to a fight. They were lucky even to finish.
You speak with authority, Mrs. Sharp.
Do you think I rested every afternoon with my Bible, Mr. Blair? Far from it. I take the racing page of the daily paper. That also can be very improving. Be well advised, Mr. McDermott, to save your money on Wait for No One. Put it on Kaminsky.
Kaminsky? Oh, but it's at 60s.
You may, of course, prefer to lose your money at a shorter price. More coffee?
Thank you.
Marion? Hmm. Do you notice any change in my daughter, Mr. Blair?
Oh, Mother.
Change? Oh, why, no.
Indeed, I thought you knew her better. Her composure is ruffled. Her sense of excitement is ill-suppressed.
And is it any wonder after what we've been through?
You found some flaw in Betty Kane's statement?
You'd better share the secret.
We've every intention of doing so. I insisted that we should wait until lunch was over before making you climb the stairs to the attic.
The attic?
It's essential to be there when you read the statement. Otherwise, the significance of the girl's words is lost.
And at no cost can we allow that. You know, this discovery has quite rejuvenated me. The attic stairs have always proved too much for me. But now, for the second time in 24 hours, I'm more than prepared to tackle them. This way, Mr. McDermott.
Now, Robert, give me the copy of the statement, and you and Mr. McDermott look out the window and listen.
Here you are.
Now, where is it? Stairs, no carpet. Here. She's just described the attic and its contents, and she goes on. In one wall, there was a small round window facing the road. Mm-hmm. I could see the driveway running from the front door, curving round a little pond that had dried up, and going
what?
On to the iron gate. You see?
My Lord, yes.
At last, there's a proof that she was lying. From this window, it's impossible to see the pond. The sloping roof cuts straight across the line of vision.
That's quite a clangor.
What the Americans might call a humdinger.
It was sheer chance that I came up here last night. You just left, Robert, and Neville hadn't arrived. The sun was going down, and I could hear Betty Kane's allegations in my head. I could hear Hallam reading them as I looked round the attic and saw the view from the window.
And we never realized at the time.
Why should we have? When Hallam read the statement downstairs, naturally we accepted it. It was an accurate description of the driveway as we know it, as it is from any of the lower windows, but not from here.
She came in darkness and she fled in darkness. In the whole fortnight, she was never out of the house.
She was never out of this room.
Or, as I prefer, she was never in this room. This may not be proof in legal terms, but it must throw the greatest doubt on the girl's story.
I'm glad you see that, Mrs. Shaw, for with counsel's help, she could still wriggle clear.
But need it ever come to that now?
Perhaps not. We've no idea where the girl was that fortnight, but we can cast a reasonable doubt on the suggestion that she was here. I think the gods might be lining up on your side at last.
So sorry to bother you again, Mrs. Kane.
What's no bother, Inspector? Did you want to see my daughter?
Is she in?
I'm expecting her any moment. Do sit down.
Thank you.
The doctor says she can go back to school next week. I'm hoping that when she does, she can forget this whole business.
I'm afraid she won't be able to do that just yet. She'll have to give evidence in court.
Well, then you're charging those two women.
Do you think we shouldn't?
On the contrary, they're dangerous. But I thought it was a question of Betty's word against theirs. You couldn't prove anything.
We couldn't. But the position's changed. That's why I...
Oh, here she is. Betty!
Yes, ma'am?
Come in a minute, darling. Inspector Hallam's here.
Hello, Betty.
Hello. Do you want to ask me some more questions?
No, you've already told us everything we need to know.
Well, the solicitor was here the other day. Did you tell him, Mum? He didn't believe me.
Oh, Mr. Blair, you mean? It's difficult for him. He has to defend the women. Betty, he'll have to believe you now. A woman has come forward to substantiate your story.
You mean she saw me in the house?
No.
She couldn't have. No one came up to the attic except the sharp.
Not saw you. Heard you. You were beating on the door and yelling for help.
When was this?
May the 5th. 3 days after your daughter was abducted.
But why didn't she say anything at the time?
Now, she's not a very bright young woman. The sharps employed her as a casual help. But on the afternoon of May the 5th, they sacked her.
Because she heard Betty shouting. That was rather foolish, surely.
And it was a risk they had to take. They minimized it as best they could. Gave the girl money. Told her to say nothing. The
girl must be a moron.
Well, as I said, she isn't very bright. And the women at the franchise frightened her.
What's her name?
Mrs. Glynn.
Mrs.?
She got married on the 8th of May. She's had other things to think about, you see.
What finally reminded her? Oh.
Exactly. She read the story in the record.
Oh, that'll please Roger.
Yes, I owe your brother an apology. I thought he'd made things doubly difficult for everyone. But without the publicity, we wouldn't have got Mrs. Glynn's evidence. And without that, there'd be no case. The sharps would have got away with it. And it's going to be my pleasure to tell them that they haven't. Try the bell again, Mr. Blair. Maybe they didn't hear it. Car's still in the garage, so they must be in.
They're not the type to run away, Hallam.
Oh, that hadn't crossed my mind, sir. If they'd been that foolish, my man on the gate would have spotted them. Effective deterrent, isn't he? No more broken windows since he's been on the scene. Ah, I think I hear someone.
Why, Robert, how nice. Do come in. Oh, good morning, Inspector.
Morning, Miss Sharp. I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm sorry I kept you waiting. We're in the kitchen. It's not easy to hear the bell. Won't you come in?
Thank you.
Has there been some new development?
I think it would be easier for you if you fetched your mother, Miss Sharp, and I told you both at the same time.
Yes, of course. If you'd like to wait here.
Thank you.
Marion.
Oh, here she is.
Only two kind of people arrive in noiseless cars, millionaires and policemen. Since we have no acquaintances among the former, and an ever-widening acquaintance with the latter, I deduce that there were policemen again in my drawing room.
I'm afraid I'm even less welcome than before, Mrs. Sharp. I'm here to serve summonses on you and your daughter.
You mean you're charging us with this thing?
You're being summoned to appear...
But why? There's no evidence.
The police think they've found corroborative evidence.
May one inquire its precise nature?
I think the best plan would be for Inspector Hallam to serve you both with the summonses, and then we can discuss the situation as it stands.
You mean we have to accept these things? We have to appear in a public court to answer...
I'm afraid...
accused of a thing like that?
There's no alternative, Marion.
I'll see myself out.
This evidence they think they have.
Oh, they have it, all right. There's no mistake about that.
The window. Did you tell Hallam about the view from the window?
Kevin told you not to put too much faith in that.
We did, but it was all we had. This evidence, Mr. Blair...
When you came to the franchise 6 months ago, you employed a girl to clean the house.
Oh, we've done better to scrub the floor ourselves. The girl was not only sullen and incompetent. She was a thief.
Are you sure of that?
Nobody else could have been responsible. They were only petty thefts, small sums of money, a scarf she liked the look of. But then one day she stole the watch my father gave me.
Oh.
Yes, you remember. I nearly told you about it the day this all began. Well, that was the last straw. The next time she came, I sacked her before she got her coat off.
But you didn't report the thefts. You didn't prosecute.
Oh, there didn't seem any point.
No point? Your property could have been recovered.
Possibly. I didn't really want it. I couldn't feel the same about my watch after Shirley Reese had worn it. You find that hard to believe? Well, it's what I feel. She was a thoroughly odious girl.
How did she react when you dismissed her?
She got very pink and flounced a bit.
She grew beetroot red and bridled like a turkey cock. Why do you ask?
Because she will say under oath that when she was working here, she heard screams coming from the attic.
Isn't it a little late in the day to tell that story?
She might have told it before, but she was frightened.
Of us.
So she says. She had other things on her mind. A few days after she left here, she got married. Shirley Reese is now Shirley Glynn.
This is a bit of a facer.
A copper-bottomed facer, I'm afraid.
A facer for you too, Mr. Blair. You're now confronted by the possibility that we have been lying.
I rejected that possibility at the beginning, Mrs. Sharp, and I see no reason to change my mind now.
That's loyal of you, Robert. But you're in a minority of two.
Two?
I'm sure we can still count on Neville's support.
Oh, yes.
On reading this summons, I see that we're required to attend court on Monday. That gives us 3 days' grace. Can we find a complete answer in that space of time?
Not without divine intervention. For a complete answer, we need to know where Betty Kane was during that fortnight. We need to know it and prove it.
She was with a man.
So we assume. But what man?
Oh, someone must know.
Kevin suggests we employ an inquiry agent. It will take time, of course. Not even they can work miracles. And we can say nothing in court on Monday.
You mean offer no defense?
There's none to offer, my dear. But before the professionals take over, there is one last line of inquiry I want to follow.
Hmm?
I'm going to Bognor Regis tomorrow morning.
Whatever for?
That's where Shirley Glynn and her new husband live. I want to get the story from her first hand.
Can I help you?
Yes, 2 ounces of tobacco, please, and a box of matches. Any morning papers left?
Not less as any in the rack.
Oh, no. I wanted a copy of the record. See if there's any further news about that kidnapping in Larborough.
Did you read that?
Yes.
Dead grotty that house was. I used to work there once.
Those two women put the fear of God into you.
You're Mrs. Glynn, aren't you?
That's right. Do you want to see Tony?
Tony?
My husband.
Ah.
He won the amateur lightweight boxing last night. I thought someone would be round from the paper this morning.
No, it's you I came to see, Mrs. Glynn.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, what? Because I used to work at that house. The franchise.
That's right.
Oh, the things I could tell you about those two women. I don't know which was worst. Here, you haven't seen them, have you?
Once or twice.
Right, vicious looking, aren't they? The old one's a bit batty, but the other one, the daughter. Dead kinky bitch she is. Betty was lucky to get out of there alive.
You heard her screaming once, didn't you?
That's why I got the sack. I heard this thumping and yelling, you see, and when I went to see what was that, the daughter came down the stairs and grabbed hold of my arm, twisted it right behind my back, she did, damn near broke it. Get out of here, she said, and don't come back.
Why didn't you tell anyone?
Oh, that's easy to say, that is. Bloody nightmares those women gave me. If you'd known them like I did, you... Here, do you want my photo? If you're going to print what I tell you, well, I've got all the wedding ones of me and Tone. They're much more like me than the one you had in the paper of Betty.
You didn't think that was a good likeness?
Yeah, must have been taken years ago. She looked like a little kid.
When did you know Betty Kane?
Down the club. The scene in Larborough. Well, I didn't know her that well. She wasn't a mate or nothing. But I knew her. Everyone knew her.
I'd like to get a story from her boyfriend. Do you know his address?
Don't even know who he is. You might try Ken Bates. She was going with him for a bit. He was lucky there and all.
How lucky?
Well, I was going with Ken Bates 2 years back, and I got Jason to show for it.
Jason?
My little boy.
Oh.
Well, I had to put him with foster parents, but, well, now I'm married, I'm going to get him back.
Was Betty always lucky with her boyfriends?
Don't ask me. I told you I hardly knew her that well. She was a bit keen on a bloke called Ricky. I do know that.
Ricky?
I don't know his other name.
You never met him?
No. All I know is she got this thing about him. Oh, she'd handle it. Bet can look after herself.
Can she?
Well, not at the franchise she couldn't, but that was different, wasn't it? I couldn't go back in that house, not for £1 million. Bad enough working here for Tone's old man, but at least he's human, not like those two women. Yes, shall I see you at the court on Monday? I can bring your photo. If you don't want the wedding one, there's one of me feeding Jason. Tone took it. Oh, it's only amateur, but it's a lovely
picture.
Well,
thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, on Monday. Then.
Right, see you. Yes, dear, can I help you?
Phew. Now I know why young girls terrify me.
You're very pensive, Robert, dear. Are you worried about the assizes next week?
Frankly, Mother, I'm scared stiff.
But I thought everything was going so well. Why, you were quite elated just before Neville went back to university.
Yes, that was 3 weeks ago, and we were in sight of success. We'd found a flaw in Betty Kane's statement, and we'd established a connection between her and Shirley Glynn.
A tenuous connection, you called it.
We were on the right road. Oh, no, I can't believe that Marion and her mother are guilty of this thing. I just can't. But if Kevin's inquiry agent doesn't come up with something soon, they're done for. It'll mean prison for both of them.
Oh, dear.
Now, don't start sympathizing, Mother. You believe they're guilty.
No, dear. No, I just don't care for them. They make me feel uncomfortable. But that doesn't mean I don't understand or sympathize.
You've always maintained the girl was telling the truth.
Well, that was before the preliminary hearing at the magistrate's court, before they were committed.
But you weren't at the hearing.
Oh, no, dear. But Colonel Lacey was, and he didn't like the girl at all. He said he'd once had a lance corporal in his regiment who was exactly like Betty Kane. An injured innocent, he said this boy was, who caused more trouble than the rest of the men put together. He finished up in the greenhouse, Colonel Lacey says.
It's the glasshouse, Mother.
Yes, dear. And as for the Glynn girl, he said one glance at her and you automatically began to calculate the number of lies there would be per sentence. So you see, dear, I do understand.
I know you do, Mother.
And I shall redouble my prayers for your success. I was going to the Smeaton's garden party tomorrow, but I think I shall go to church instead. I think it's going to rain in any case. The forecast says so. And it always does rain at the Smeaton's garden party. The poor thing.
It's pouring down. Just as well we didn't play golf this afternoon.
It's just as well my mother didn't go to the garden party.
Why was that, Mr. Blair? I hope she's not ill.
No, she thought it more important to help us.
Oh.
She's praying for a miracle.
I appreciate that.
I could almost join her.
You're both taking this extremely well. 3 weeks ago, there was every reason to be confident, and now...
Oh, ranting and raving have never achieved anything worthwhile. If that kind of behavior could help trace this man, then we would both be cavorting along the high street in the nude.
I really doubt his existence now, after all the publicity the case has received.
He may be frightened to come forward. He may have a wife and family.
And a conscience. Has he got a conscience, Robert, this myth that you envisage? Could he let my mother and me go to prison?
I'm afraid he could, if he's the same caliber as Betty Kane.
He could have gone abroad.
And he could be dead. Might as well be dead.
I never thought of that.
I think the most likely explanation is that he knows all about the case, but that the name of Betty Kane means nothing to him.
Hmm.
That type of young woman would derive additional excitement from living under an assumed name. It would also, of course, help to cover her tracks, a fact of which she would not be insensible. She'd call herself Tracy, I should think.
Mother.
Or even Sharon.
We could theorize all day.
Oh, Robert, you didn't tell us Neville was home.
He isn't. Next Tuesday, I think.
Where's his car in the drive?
What?
I'll let him in.
What's he doing here?
Your brother is an unpredictable young man, Mr. Blair. He's also considerate to visit us as soon as he was home.
He's very concerned for you both.
Oh, his concern, together with his unpredictability, has always been apparent.
Again, Neville, come along here.
Oh, this is a meaningless adjective for you. You could have chosen marvelous or delightful or even thrilling. Good afternoon, Mrs.
Good afternoon.
Bob, I've been looking for you.
Would you like some tea?
Champagne is more appropriate.
What?
Four glasses.
Look, Neville.
We're celebrating an urgent phone call from Kevin McDermott.
Kevin phoned you?
Yes, he couldn't find you. Rang your office, no one knew where you were, no one at home. In desperation, he rang me, and of course, I put two and two together. Thanks, Marion. You're losing your grip at the office, Bob. Fancy not leaving this phone number. Shy about it, eh?
What did Kevin want?
He sent you all a message. Very brief, with his love. They've got him.
What?
Hey, quick, the glasses.
Got him? The man?
Yes, the runaway Romeo. The man they've been combing Britain for. Only he wasn't in Britain, he was in Denmark.
Oh.
And he hadn't run away, he was doing business for his firm.
Neville,
be serious, is that true?
How can I be serious? Isn't this the moment we've all been waiting for?
Oh,
rejoice, rejoice, and raise your glasses. Confusion to Betty Kane.
Oh, I think we have.
Miss Kane. You say that it was dark when you arrived at the franchise. Was it really so dark?
Yes, absolutely dark.
Too dark to see the outside of the house.
Yes, it was nearly midnight.
But it wasn't midnight when you escaped from the house 12 days later.
Oh, no, it was about 10.
10 o'clock at night?
Yes.
And there was no moon?
Oh, it was cloudy. You couldn't see the moon.
So again, it was very dark.
Yes.
On neither of these occasions, therefore, could you see the exterior of the house with any clarity?
No, it wasn't possible.
No. Well, having settled that point, let us now consider the window, the small round window in the attic. You said in your statement to the police that the driveway ran from the front door to the main road, I quote, curving round a little palm that had dried up and going on to the iron gates, which looked a bit rusty. How were you able to describe the palm so accurately, Miss Kay?
How? Well, I saw it.
But you've just told the court that it was too dark to see anything.
But that was at night. I saw the pond quite clearly from the window in the daytime.
Are you asking the court to believe that you see on a plane different from other people? On the same principle, perhaps, as the Irishman's gun that shoots round corners? From the window in the attic, Miss Kane, you can only see the straight part of the drive. The pond is obscured by an overhanging roof.
I take it, Mr. McDermott, that you have a witness to the extent of the view from the window.
Two, my lord.
One with normal vision would be sufficient.
Him.
More than that, surely. I am told that your friendship has been intimate.
No! I don't think I'd even recognize him.
Thank you, Miss Kane.
You'd like to re-examine, Mr. Allison?
Thank you, my lord. Miss Kane, you arrived at the franchise by car.
Yes.
And that car, you say in your statement, was driven up to the door of the house. As it was dark, there must have been side lights on the car, if not headlights, so the driveway would have been illuminated.
Yes, of course. That's when I saw the dried up pond when we arrived. I knew I'd seen it.
Thank you, Miss Kane.
I told you Alison would spring her out of that trap.
Let her enjoy her trials while she can. She's no idea what's coming to her.
I see what's coming to us. A repulsive Mrs. Glynn may reach.
Oh, yeah.
His lordship's nose is wrinkling in detail.
Mrs. Glynn, for some months before your recent marriage, you were employed at the franchise in a domestic capacity.
I went sometimes, casual labor-like.
On the last occasion, the date I believe was May the 5th, you say you heard screams coming from the region of the attic.
That's right. Loud screams, one after another. Blood-curdling they was.
What did you do when you heard those screams?
I come over queer. I had to sit down.
I'm sure that was a natural reaction, but when it passed, did you attempt to investigate?
Oh, yes, of course I did.
Please tell the court what action you took.
Well, I was in the kitchen when the first one come. I felt sort of numb all over. Then there was another and a lot of banging, like someone was locked in and trying to get out. I ran out into the hall and started up the stairs. I thought like one of the women must have hurt themselves. I was halfway up the stairs when Mrs. Sharp came out of the front room and said, what was I doing? Why hadn't I gone home?
And what did you reply?
I said, didn't you hear that screaming? There's someone hurt. She said I was imagining things, and just then the daughter came. She got hold of my arm and twisted it. Really hurt me, she did.
Miss Sharp deliberately assaulted you?
Of course she did. Nearly broke me arm.
Did she say anything to you?
Told me to get out of the house and never come there again. I didn't need no telling. I wouldn't have gone there again for £1,000,000.
You left the house immediately. The two women said nothing more?
Not to me, they didn't. But I heard Mrs. Sharp say something to her daughter when they thought I was back in the kitchen.
What was it you overheard Mrs. Sharp say?
She said, you want to control yourself, Marion. Try and be more careful in future.
So you went home and never heard from the Sharps again?
I heard from them. Next day, they sent me a letter saying they didn't want me no more, but thanks for all I'd done, and put in £10 in the envelope.
Did they owe you that money?
£3 they owed me. They said the rest was a present. Out of gratitude, the letter said.
I'm sure my learned friend is especially anxious to know why you didn't mention the incident of the screams to anyone when you were safely out of the house. Will you tell us why that was, Mrs. Glynn?
Well, I was scared. I was always scared of those women. queer things went on in that house, and I didn't want to get tied up in anything. Well, then getting married and everything, I forgot about it. Wasn't till I saw the bit in the papers about Betty being locked up in the franchise and I put two and two together.
And you conquered your fear and told the police your story. Well, that was very public-spirited of you, Mrs. Glynn. Thank you.
Mrs. Glynn, my learned friend has praised your public spirit. Is that really what inspired your coming here today?
I came because it was my duty.
Your duty to whom? Society or yourself? You have regaled the court with a melodrama of screams and bribery and assault, but you have ended unconvincingly with an anti-climax. When this afternoon of terror was over, you did precisely nothing.
No!
You did nothing, Mrs. Glynn, to help that poor imprisoned creature in the attic at the franchise. For nearly 3 weeks, you kept the entire incident to yourself. Do you consider that you did your duty in that instance?
I told you I was scared, and I didn't think anyone would believe me.
Commendably shrewd of you. Mrs. and Miss Sharp have a very different explanation of why you did not return to the house again. They claim, Mrs. Glynn, that you were dismissed for stealing.
Oh, well, they'd have to say something, wouldn't they?
Indeed they would, and it is for the jury to decide which of the two stories is the more credible. Miss Marion Sharp alleges that you stole a wristwatch belonging to
She's
her.
Lying, I never...
The theft of that watch was the latest in a series of petty thefts which occurred during your period of employment at the franchise. When that employment was terminated, you were uncertain, were you not, whether you might be prosecuted by Miss Sharp.
I never stole nothing, they're lying.
You were frightened of the women at the franchise. It was in their power to send you to prison for a long time.
Mr. McDermott, as you've already observed, an element of melodrama has been introduced to this case. Regrettably, I'm forced to the conclusion that you are not averse to this.
I assure you, my lord, I find it deplorable, but I am anxious that the witness should fully understand me.
Yes, we all want to understand you, Mr. McDermott. I am experiencing no difficulty on that score.
Thank you, my lord. Mrs. Glynn, I suggest that when a daily newspaper undertook the publication of Betty Kane's story, you saw it as a golden opportunity. Here was your chance to discredit the Sharps before they could complain about you.
I've told you the truth.
You realize, don't you, that if it is proved in this court that Betty Kane was not locked in that attic, then you are telling a blatant lie. Now, before your marriage, Mrs. Glynn, you were in the habit of visiting a club called The Scene. Among the people that you knew there was a girl called Betty Kane. Did you ever tell her that you worked at the franchise?
Yes.
You did. You described the house in detail?
Well, yes.
You told her about the two women and their car and how they lived alone and had no friends?
No harm in telling people.
But why tell such a detailed story? Why be so specific about the rusty clasps on the old blue suitcase, or the crack in the attic window, or the scratch on the car door? Why, Mrs. Glynn?
She was interested. She asked me.
Betty Kane asked you?
Yes.
You're sure of that? This is the truth now, isn't it? She asked you.
Of course she did. I'm good at describing things.
I should say you were unbelievably thorough. Thank you, Mrs. Glynn.
I must say, Mother, Kevin's making the most of it. That ghastly little cretin can't see what she's let herself in for. I bet her pal Betty Kane could murder her.
Oh, it's all very unpleasant, Neville. When do you think they'll adjourn for lunch, dear?
Oh, any minute now. They'll keep Richard Chadwick till this afternoon. He can be relied on to stop anyone snatching a postprandial nap.
You are Bernard Richard Chadwick, and you're a commercial traveller in household appliances. Is that right?
Quite right, sir, yes.
You travel extensively for your firm?
All over the place, yes. Abroad, too, quite often.
You make fairly frequent business calls at a club in Larborough, The Scene?
Ah, every month. They're a very good customer.
Did you ever meet, on those premises, a girl called Betty Kane?
Well, I know who you mean, sir, but...
You know her, perhaps, under another name?
Natalie, she introduced herself as.
She introduced herself to you?
Yes.
Did that surprise you?
Well, not surprise me, exactly. I was on my guard, though.
Now, why was that, Mr. Chadwick?
Well, I had a feeling she was the type to get a bloke into trouble, sir.
How old did you assume this young lady to be?
She told me she was 22.
And did you believe her?
Well, I thought it likely.
Mr. Chadwick, you strike me as a man of some experience in these matters. Did you really believe the girl was 22?
Oh, she could have been anywhere between 20 and 25, my lord. She looked much older then than what she does now. Well, she kept on about it being her 22nd birthday. She got me to buy her a lipstick to celebrate.
Nothing more than a lipstick. You got up like her, Mr. Chadwick.
How long have you known Betty Kane?
We've been out a couple of times in my car.
A couple of times? Before May the 2nd?
No more than that.
So it was no more than a casual friendship?
That's right.
But on May the 2nd, it began to develop. Tell us what happened that day, Mr. Chadwick.
Well, I called in at the club as usual and saw the manager. We did a bit of business. And as I was leaving, I met Nat, Betty Kane, coming in. She told me it was her birthday the day before. And will I take her out to lunch?
So you did?
Yes, I did. Well, I didn't see no harm in it.
How could you? What did you talk about over lunch?
Holidays. Well, she said she was ready for one, and I told her I was all set to have mine. I was going to spend a bit of time on my boat before going off to a conference in Copenhagen.
You told Betty Kane that?
That's right.
You told her the date of the conference and its location?
Yeah.
Go on, Mr. Chadwick.
Well, she said she was as free as I was. And wouldn't it be fun if we went down to the boat together? Well, I mean, nobody in their right mind would have passed that up, would they?
Didn't it occur to you that the girl's family might be concerned about her?
She said she hadn't got a family. She lived in Diggs in Larborough with another girl.
So, being in what you considered your right mind, you drove her to your boat, which was harbored near Chichester, and you stayed there together for a fortnight.
Nearly a fortnight, yeah.
And in all that time, Betty Kane never once mentioned that she ought to be going home.
Oh, not her. She knew when she was onto a good thing.
But she learned that all good things come to an end.
Well, they do, don't they?
And how did the idyll at Chichester finally disintegrate?
Eh? Oh. It was on the Thursday of the second week. An urgent bit of business came up and I had to go up to Sheffield. I told Nat I'll be back sometime on a Saturday and took off. Well, as it was, the business didn't take long. And I got back to the boat late on the Friday night.
And what did you find on your return?
Blimey, what didn't I find? She'd only grabbed a chance to invite somebody in to keep her company.
Another man?
Well, she ain't the sort to give ladies tea parties. It was a man, all right.
What was your reaction, Mr. Chadwick, to this unexpected welcome?
Well, I put a bloke off me boat double quick. Now I told her what I thought of her.
And just how did you express yourself?
I thumped her.
You hit the girl?
Well, she'd been taking advantage, my lord. Done her a part of good if somebody had thumped her before.
Yes, well, just confine yourself to your story, Mr. Chadwick.
Well, like I said, sir, I hit her. And she went down on the floor and started screaming. Well, I picked her up and hit her again.
With your fist?
Well, with me open hand at first. But when she started going spare and kicking me, I took a stick to her. Well, she got me dead riled, honest. Otherwise, I wouldn't have. Well, next thing, she passed out. I went to get some water to bring her around, but when I got back, she'd gone. She'd just been play-acting. Well, I chased after her, but I couldn't find her. Even took the car up to the main road, but there was no sign of her. She'd gone for good.
And you never saw her again?
Not till just now, no.
Mr. Chadwick, this case has been the subject of much newspaper comment in the past week. Did it never cross your mind that the girl who claimed to have been a prisoner in the franchise and the young woman who stayed with you on your boat might be one and the same?
Look, I haven't seen a paper for weeks. Well, like I told you, I've been at this conference in Copenhagen and I stayed on there doing business. I didn't get back here till 5 days ago.
Mr. Chadwick, will you look at Betty Kane? That is the girl who has given evidence today that she was forcibly detained in a house called the Franchise for a period of 12 days. Do you still say that she is, in fact, the girl who picked you up in a club and lived with you of her own free will on a boat near Chichester for that same period of time?
That's her, all right. No doubt of it.
No doubt at all, Mr. Chadwick.
Not a shadow of doubt, sir. That's the girl.
Oh.
Champagne. Never was extravagant.
It gives me enormous pleasure to drink to the downfall of that unspeakable creature. Both those unspeakable creatures.
Their downfall isn't quite complete. Hallam assures me that they'll both face charges of perjury.
That gives me enormous satisfaction. I shall drink a toast to Mr. Chadwick. He has my undying gratitude for thrashing that girl.
Mrs. Sharp, I've not had a chance to thank you yet.
You thank me, Mr. McDermott? Whatever for?
Kominsky, your tip for the race at Hunter.
Oh.
It won by a length and a half on a tight rein.
I'm delighted to hear it. We also came in on a tight rein, I feel, but with a far less generous margin.
You look a little pale, Marion.
It's the reaction I expect. Let's walk down the drive, Robert. It'll reassure me that I'm a free woman again.
Well, there'll still be people peering through those gates.
Let them. Today I feel like royalty. I may even wave to them.
Marion, my darling, now this is over, I want you to marry me.
Robert, dear, have you really thought about this? Even the proof that I didn't beat Betty Kane doesn't free me from being the woman in the case. It wouldn't do you any good in your position.
That's for me to decide.
Well, there are practical problems, too. Mothers, for instance. We can't just park them as though they weren't needed anymore. And don't forget my temper.
I said no excuses. Perhaps I'm rushing you. I'll ask you again tomorrow. Will you play golf with me in the morning?
If I lose, I shall be bad-tempered.
Then I shall see that you win. May I hope till tomorrow?
Of course. You can always hope. That's something I've learned these past weeks. Call for me in the morning, Robert. I'll be waiting.
In The Franchise Affair, adapted by John Hyatt from the novel by Josephine Tay, Robert Blair was played by John Justin, Marion Sharp by Maddie Head, and Betty Kane by Joe Manning Wilson. Mrs. Sharp, Griselda Harvey. Mrs. Kane, Margot Boyd. Roger Kane, Nicholas Edmett. Inspector Hallam, Malcolm Hayes. Neville Blair, Frank Duncan. Mrs. Blair, Dorothy Lane. Kevin McDermott, QC, Dennis Hawthorne. Shirley Glynn, Patricia Gallimore. The Judge, James Thomason. Miles Allison, QC, Godfrey Kenton. Richard Chadwick, Kelly Francis. The play was produced by Betty Davis.